Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you like this video. Give us a positive comment if you'd be so kind. Today, I'm really excited about a special guest. She has some great resources that I think that all parents need in their toolkit. So Elizabeth Urbanowitz, welcome. We are excited to hear about your life, your ministry, and this incredible book you wrote. And so, welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me on today, Brady. I'm just excited to get to sit down and chat with you and really grateful for what you do here and your podcast and your ministry in general. So just a little bit of background. I was born and raised in a Christian home, which was such a blessing to be raised in a home where both of my parents were faithfully following Jesus and lived out the gospel every day. They're definitely not perfect, and none of us are, but was really grateful for that. I became a Christian at a young age. And as I grew, it became clear that the Lord had gifted me with the ability to teach. And so I went into elementary education in college and then taught at a Christian school for the first decade of my professional career and loved getting to teach in a Christian school where I got to teach the whole truth. I didn't have to, you know, silence certain parts of it just to be politically correct. So loved that. However, it was several years into my teaching experience that I noticed an issue with my students, that most of them came from really solid Christian homes. I was giving them a biblically based education all day long. Most of them were involved in a local church, and they knew all of the Bible verses and Bible stories and right Bible answers. However, when it came to carefully evaluating just the countless messages that they received, you know, whether it was in the classroom or through books or on the playground or on TikTok or on Disney Plus, they lacked any kind of filter to be able to think, okay, this is what the Bible says. What did I just hear? Does this line up? Does this not? Is it true? Is it not true? So I just set out on a journey looking for some materials to equip these 8 and 9 year olds that the Lord had placed in my care to think critically and biblically. And all the resources I found were created for high school on up. And I was so grateful those resources existed. But I thought, man, like these 8 and 9 year olds in my care, if we wait until they're 15, 16, 17 to begin training them to think critically, we've lost so much ground. So I just started taking some classes, doing some research on my own, reading some books, and created a comparative worldview class that I taught to third through fifth graders after school. And those students, they were so amazing. They took what we learned in that class and they just ran with it, and they applied it at, you know, in math class, in history class. I had moms calling me and saying, so during family movie night, my son wants to pause the movie and evaluate the character's worldview. This is great, but I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? And so it was just so amazing. And when people saw this transformation, I started getting calls from all over the country with people saying, how can we get our hands on what you have? And I was like, I'm a third grade teacher. I'm not a Christian publishing house. I don't really have anything for you. But when those phone calls kept coming year after year, eventually it was like, okay, Lord, clearly this isn't just an issue in this, you know, small school in the tiny, you know, northwest suburbs of Chicago. It's an issue that people are feeling all over the country and across the world. So at that point, went back to school, got a master's degree in Christian apologetics from Biola University, just to make sure I knew what I was talking about, and then stepped back from the classroom to start Foundation Worldview, which is a ministry that's designed to equip Christian parents and educators and church leaders with just easy to implement resources to equip the kids in their care to carefully evaluate every idea they encounter so that they genuinely understand that Christianity is true. So I just have the privilege of investing my days in running that ministry, and I'm so grateful for that.
That is amazing. Thank you so much. Your ministry, Foundation Worldview, has some great resources. One of them is the book that we're going to talk about, but you have some other just awesome resources for parents, like a book club and all kinds of things to equip them. I love that you're helping parents to teach kids to think critically at a much younger age than I think that many times we think that they're capable of. And my wife and I, we're getting ready to start homeschooling next year. And I think that we're going with a co-op that does classical conversations and classical education. And so my wife's been reading on it and books like, gosh, like kids are capable of so much more at a younger age than I think we assume that they are. Mm-hmm. And so you're teaching them to teach critically, to think critically at a much younger age. I think that one of the things I appreciate about your resources and your book here is that it's so practical. And your book here answers 40 questions. And it's so practical because so many times I have parents like, okay, I understand biblical morality. I know that homosexuality is a sin. I know that that's bad. I know that that is bad. But how do I walk alongside and disciple my kids? And I think I grew up in an era where, and maybe this was just my experience, but it seemed to be, we're kind of in and out of the church when I was a child. that there wasn't a lot of discipleship. Like, we knew the morality, right? We knew that homosexuality is bad. But then when I started to struggle, I couldn't talk about it because you weren't allowed to talk about those things. You just knew that they were bad. And so how do we take the conversation so much further than these things are bad, and actually shepherd our kids' hearts, right? We want to disciple our kids. We want to apply the gospel to their lives and not just teach them a system of morality.
Yes, absolutely. I love what you're hitting on there, Brady, because we do want to go so much deeper than do this, don't do this. We want them to understand the full arc of the gospel, because even when we think about talking with our kids about sexuality, we need to think about, like, what is the ultimate end goal? And now, them having a God-honoring marriage and family and sex life, you know, like, those are good minor goals and they're important in this life. But the ultimate goal when we're teaching our kids about biblical sexuality is that they would taste and see that the Lord is good, that they would understand that they are fallen, that they are sinful, and that their only hope of salvation in Jesus is that they, and that they would delight in Him. So I love how you lay that out, that we don't want to just teach them yes and no, right and wrong. We want to teach them the full arc of the story of the gospel.
Absolutely. That is awesome. So I want to go through some of the practical things that are in your books, because these are questions that I get. And so you're answering these questions. One is about, how do we prepare our kids to see inappropriate images? Our world is full of pornography. I've been diving into that recently with, you know, inappropriate books in school libraries and public libraries and bookstores. And I've been astounded at what I've found, and so somewhat discouraged and alarmed. And so we want to protect our kids from seeing those things, but at some point they're going to see those things. And I remember the first time I saw those images, that they are ingrained in my brain. And, you know, so many people I walk alongside, their story of sexual brokenness started by seeing something inappropriate. And so how do we prepare our kids for that?
Yeah, I love that word prepare that you've used, because I think that that is so key. That was something when I was teaching third grade at this Christian school that I was shocked. You know, I'm teaching 8 and 9 year olds, and I had a variety of children in my class whose parents just shared with me that they had stumbled across pornography on the internet. Then I had other situations where students would have play dates and one of my students would introduce another one, you know, to pornographic images or videos. And then as I grew, you know, I'm a single female. I'm not married, never been married, but most of my friends are married. And as you know, my friends started getting married and going further in their marriages, several of my friends had husbands who had stumbled across pornography when they were like 8 or 9 years old. It became a lifelong addiction and then really hindered their marriage for so many years. And
absolutely,
so it's so important that we not just think, okay, you know, I'm going to really try really hard just to shield my child from this. Now, should we try really hard to shield our children from it? Yes, we should. But we can't trust that our shield is going to be strong enough to defend them, because the porn industry isn't just out there waiting for our kids to stumble across it. It's predatory. It's out there trying to get them hooked. And so what I recommend for parents is that they actually start the conversation about pornography without using the word porn at a much younger age than you would typically think. I actually recommend having the first conversation about good pictures and bad pictures starting around the age of 4. Now, I know some people are thinking like, oh my goodness, you've got to be kidding me. Like, my little...
I have a 4-year-old girl right now. And so
yes!
Just her understanding those concepts is like, gosh, do we have to do this right now? But I think that we do.
Yes. And it's so important. And so what I like to walk parents through are just some steps to make it so that it's not this big intimidating thing, you know, because if you sat down with your 4-year-old daughter, Brady, you know, and just had this big, heavy conversation about all the different types of bad pictures out there, like, one, it might be confusing. Two, it's probably too much for her little heart and mind to handle right now. But we can do this in an age appropriate way. So what I recommend is, you know, when parents have younger kids, to just start by going on a picture walk throughout your house and say, okay, we're going to look for all of the good pictures that we have in our house. You know, and talk about the pictures on your fridge. Maybe you hang like Christmas cards up on your fridge and like, oh, this reminds us of our friends and family who we love so much and they love us. These are such good pictures. Then, you know, like, look at your wedding picture and, oh, this reminds us how much mommy and daddy love one another. And then, you know, look at pictures of friends or family or, you know, pictures of vacation and how it reminds you of a great time that you had together. And then say, God has given us so many good pictures that we can be thankful for. And then say, you know what? Because of sin, not all pictures are good pictures. And then briefly explain it. You can say sometimes because of sin, people take pictures or videos or make drawings of people without clothes covering the special parts of their body that our bathing suits were designed to cover. And these pictures, they're not good pictures. They're bad pictures because they don't treat the people in the pictures like they bear God's image, and they don't treat the people looking at them like they bear God's image. Then you can, you know, if this is feeling too much for your young child, you can then say, but remember, most of the pictures we see are good and we can be thankful for them. And then just explain a three-step formula that if you ever see a bad picture, if you ever see a picture without clothes covering those special parts of someone's body, I want you to do three things. First, I want you to stop. I want you to stop looking at it right away. Second thing I want you to do is run. I want you to run right to me, or if I'm not here, I want you to run to the nearest safe adult. And three, I want you to tell me exactly what you saw. And that might be hard for you to tell me, but I'm going to be so proud of you when you tell me that, because that's going to help me protect you from seeing those kind of bad pictures again. So just go through the stop, run, and tell. And then wrap a little bow on the conversation by focusing again on good pictures and say, but you know what? Most of the pictures that we see are going to be good pictures, and we can be so grateful for that. And then take, you know, one more picture walk, find a few more pictures around your house, and then just continue the conversation as your children get older. But if you have that initial conversation, you're giving them the tools, because usually one of two things immediately happens when children view pornography. Either one, they feel terribly ashamed and embarrassed, yes, and they want to hide it. Or two, they feel curious and drawn to it, and they want to figure out how they can see more. So if you just give them the stop, run, tell, and they know that you're going to be so proud of them, that's going to kind of like head off the problem right when it starts.
Yes, that is awesome. And that is encouraging that I need to start doing that with my daughter. And I love that it's purposely not building a heart of fear in them, right? We don't want them to be fixated on, oh, well, what are these bad images and what happens, like, right? Like, so that's, I love that, wrapping around on both sides of it with good pictures, mm-hmm, so that they get some little doses of reality and preparation that isn't overwhelming for them, that they think that they need to live in fear, mm-hmm. And we need it with every child and see how their heart is responding, and, you know, probably correct course as needed, as every child responds differently to each of these conversations.
Right. Absolutely.
That's great. Another whole section on the book that I really appreciated, that I get questions from parents all the time on, this is like, how do we talk to our kids about sex? And when do we do it? And I see this a lot in like dad groups, some of them Christian groups, some secular groups. Usually the secular groups are really horrible, especially the answers. But the dad groups I'm in just always reminds me of how much the world needs Jesus. And so it's kind of good motivation that dads need Jesus and to be equipped. Mm-hmm. But I even have Christian parents ask, like, when should I have the talk with my kids? And it's like, you shouldn't have the talk. You should have like thousands of talks, is kind of my standard answer. And in those thousands of talks, you know, you should be building in your kids, like, what is the purpose of relationships, and what is the purpose of marriage, and what desires are you having, and you process through those desires. But you take that so much further in this, and it's so great. So let's talk about that. At what age should we traditionally have the talk, and how is that strung out in age-appropriate ways throughout their childhood?
Yes. Well, I love how you said it should really be thousands of talks, because it should be this ongoing conversation, because part of discipling our children, teaching them to be followers of Jesus, involves teaching them how to view human sexuality biblically. You know, so we would never take any other part of discipleship. You know, we'd never hand our kid a Bible and say, okay, you're supposed to read your Bible, good luck. You know, like, no, yeah. We systematically walk them through it, train them how to read it. You know, same with how to treat others. And so we need to step back from this the talk mentality and think of it as, yes, there's the initial talk and then the hundreds, if not thousands, of talks that follow after that. So what I recommend, again, is that same age range of around 4 years old, sometime between the ages of 4 and 6, which I want to say two things about that. First, I know that shocks many people. Let me explain in a minute. Second, if your child, you're listening or watching and your child is already like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, it's not too late. So I'm not saying that you completely missed the ship on this. It's never too late to start having biblically grounded conversations. They just look a little bit different at the older ages, which I'll get to. But why do I recommend starting around 4, sometime between the age of 4 and 6? The reason is really twofold. One is the founder's effect, which is just a term that's been coined by my friend Hillary Ferrer from Mama Bear Apologetics. Mm. And the founder's effect is just this psychological phenomenon that whoever is the first person to talk with us about something naturally becomes the expert in our minds. I actually just experienced this a few weeks ago. My car started making a strange sound. And so I know nothing about cars. So I texted a friend of mine. And I was like, hey, my car's making this strange sound. Can I swing by your house tonight and have your husband look at my car and tell me if I need to, you know, take it to a garage? And she was like, sure. So I swung by their house that night and her husband, as he's coming out of the house, he's like, Elizabeth, I'm happy to do this for you. He's like, but I'm just curious, like, why are you asking me for help? Like, I know nothing about cars. And I had to pause and think. And I was like, why am I asking you? You don't know anything about cars. And then I remembered that the first month that I moved to the town where I now live, I got a flat tire and was stranded on the side of the road. And my friend's husband came to my rescue. He came and he put on a spare tire and then directed me towards a garage that could replace the tire permanently. So in my mind, because he was the first one to talk with me about car stuff in this town, in my mind, he is now the expert on all things cars, even though he has no expertise in it. And so it's similar with our children, that whoever talks with them about human sexuality first is naturally going to be viewed as the expert in our kids' minds. And so if we want them to come to us with their questions, their concerns, their curiosities, their fears, we have to make sure that we are the first ones to open up this conversation. The second reason why it's so important to start this conversation at a young age is we want our children to understand that the gift of sexuality is inherently good, that God is the one who designed sexuality. He's the one that made us male or female. He's the one that made sex to be the sign and the seal of the marriage covenant. He's the author of it. And we want them to understand that at its base, that design is good. Now, have our fallen, sinful hearts and minds corrupted that design? Yes, they have. However, they haven't taken away the inherent goodness of that design. And so if we wait to have the first conversation with our children about sex or marriage or family or, you know, by being male or female, until our children have just encountered a corruption of that design, then we have to go into backtracking mode and explain how what they just saw is not God's good design before they even understand what God's design is. So before they're exposed to anything, we want to make sure that we've had the opportunity to start laying that biblical foundation. As a bonus, third reason why this is great, when you start the conversation when your children are under the age of 7, there's only one person in the equation who feels awkward, and that's you as the adult. Child feels no awkwardness about this. Now, starting around the age of 8 or 9, that, you know, that awkwardness or embarrassment does start to enter the conversation. And again, it's not too late. So that's why I recommend having that first of many talks around the age of 4, you know, up to the age of 6. So that's the reasoning behind that.
That's awesome. Yes. And it should be just be lifelong discipleship of that this is a good thing. And that's where I see so many adults have a hard time with sexuality of, you know, even they've saved themselves and been pure and then they get married and it's been such presented as such a bad thing that is so shameful that it causes a lot of problems in marriage when we treat it as something that is shameful and not a good gift from God that needs to be stewarded and shepherded really, really well.
Yes. And that's actually one of the reasons why I think it's really easy for us to be hesitant to talk with our children about sex, because sometimes we don't actually have a biblical understanding of it because of what we've experienced, or, you know, whether it's our own sin or the sin of others that's been thrust upon us, or just, you know, poor discipleship in this area when we were growing up or when we first became Christians. So sometimes parents will say to me, like, well, I don't want to talk with my 4 or 5 year old about sex. Like, that's going to be stealing their innocence. And I'm like, well, let's think about the assumption behind that. The assumption behind that is simply knowing that the act of sexual intercourse exists is somehow causing our children to become dirty or tainted, where that's not true. And so I would just really encourage, you know, any adult who's listening and thinking like, oh my gosh, I could never talk to a child, you know, my child that age about that, to really start to press into, do I genuinely understand what the biblical teaching on sexuality is, because a lot of times we need, you know, really, we need more discipleship in that area.
And maybe that'll reveal some baggage in the parent's life that needs to be dealt with. It's like, there's so many of us who deal with shame. Those of us who have lived, you know, prodigal lives and steeped in sexual sin, or people on the purity side who have been very pure, but there's still a level of shame. And so I think that as we walk through this with our kids, you are right, it might reveal our own need for discipleship, maybe our own need for some, you know, unrepentant sin. I know a lot of dads who have a hard time discipling their kids with this because they're still dealing with porn themselves and they need some repentance and transformation. And there's so much shame in their own life then they can't disciple their kids. And so they need transformation. One of the questions you answer in the book is about being hypocritical. Like, am I hypocritical by teaching my kids biblical sexuality when I didn't follow those standards? And I find that is a big hang up for a lot of parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a question that we just receive so often at Foundation Worldview. And so that, you know, in that chapter, what I really encourage people to do is to think through, what does it mean to be hypocritical? So to be a hypocrite means to be saying one thing, but then living another thing. So, you know, for any parents who might still be steeped in sexual sin, you know, if you're presenting this to your children and then presenting yourself as if, you know, like, you followed this and you are currently following this, then yes, that would be hypocritical. But that the response is not just to be like, oh, well, then I guess I'm never going to have this conversation with my child. The response is proper confession and repentance. You know, not that we're going to go confess to our children, you know, that we have a porn addiction, but to go, you know, before the Lord, you know, to confess that, to get proper biblical shepherding through, you know, like the elders at our local church, through a biblical counselor. And so then to help our children understand, again, the arc of the gospel. And so for any parents who, you know, who have, you know, different baggage from sexual sin in your past, or sexual sin, you know, even in your recent past, I recommend that, you know, this is not a conversation you have with a four-year-old, but this is a conversation, you know, you might have with a 10, 11, 12 on up child. Talk with them again about the goodness of God's design for sex and how he designed it as the sign and the seal of the marriage covenant. And then that's when you can be honest with them. You can say, you know, like, let's say you engaged in sexual, you know, many sexual relationships before marriage. You can say, you know what, even though God's good design is for sex to be reserved for marriage, when I was in high school and when I was in college, I didn't do that. That the people that I dated, I chose to engage in sexual relationships with them. And then, you know, you don't want to give your kid too much detail. You don't want to give them names. You don't want to give them, you know, anything else. But then you can briefly talk about, you know, some of the consequences of that, you know, whether it was guilt or shame, you know, whether it was an unplanned pregnancy, whether, you know, like, whatever the consequences were. And then focus on the arc of the gospel and say, you know what, when I did that, that was a sin against God. That was a sin against those people. That was a sin against your mom or against your dad. But you know what? When I came to Jesus and repented, he forgave me. And when God looks at me, he doesn't see someone who has sexually sinned in the past. When God looks at me, he sees the perfect righteousness of Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing that I chose not to follow God's good design? And there were consequences, you know, maybe it's even some of them that I still feel, but God has forgiven me in Jesus. And so that's what I recommend, that you don't put just the focus on your own sexual sin, but you put the focus on God's grace in Jesus, because our kids need to know that. Because absolutely, as much as we would hope and pray that our children would live sexually faithful lives, none of us is pure outside of the righteousness of Christ. And, you know, so that we, you know, we would hope and pray that they're not going to engage in sex outside of marriage, that they're not going to engage in homosexual relationships, you know, that they're not going to, you know, struggle with pornography or other forms of sexual sin. However, even if they don't get engaged in those, our children are going to struggle at times with lustful thoughts or laughing at a joke that someone has made that isn't honoring God. And so we want to continually point our kids towards God's grace in Jesus and to understand that that grace is freely available and that there is great joy in choosing through the power of the Holy Spirit to faithfully follow Christ. So that's what I would really encourage anyone who's struggling with their own, you know, guilt and shame over past sexual sin.
Yes, I love that. And I see a lot of that guilt and shame, you know, interfere with parents' discipleship of their kids. And it's really should be a celebration of the gospel, right? And God's grace. But parents have to be willing to apply that grace to their own life. And that comes from confession and repentance. And many times when a parent hasn't applied the gospel to their own life, it goes one of two ways. It can become a licensure to sin, right? Like they can't call that out because they're still doing it. So it must not be that bad. And they harden themselves against the seriousness of it, or it becomes very legalistic. Like, you know, I hate that I was, succumbed by this sin. And so they become very, very legalistic and they hate that sin because they saw what it did in their life and they just clamp down, put the hammer down, and they don't want their kids to make the same mistake, but they miss the gospel and the grace. And so I want parents themselves to experience that grace. And walking through this with our kids is a great opportunity to examine our own lives, our own hearts, and where maybe we still need to apply God's grace and forgiveness to our own lives. There's so much that we could talk about, and I know that we can't talk about everything that you talk about in your book because it's also good. And so that's why people should just buy it. I do want to take a moment and talk about how do we help protect our children from sexual abuse. That's a big topic these days. And I think that one of those issues that parents can want to go one of two ways is just be ignorant or live in fear. And we don't want to overcorrect in either one of those areas. We want to have confidence and security. And we can do that by being educated. And so what are some steps in our modern world? I would have a lot of thoughts on, you know, social media, but I already talk about protecting our kids from social media a lot. And so, in your expertise, we can probably apply some safeguards at younger ages. And so, what are some steps that parents can take to protect our kids?
Yes, I do want to just say up front that there is no foolproof plan, sadly, for protecting our children completely from sexual abuse. But as you said, there are some wise steps that we can take. And in all honesty, Brady, the first one is just to start this conversation young. So what I want to do is I want to just model three basic conversations that parents could have with their children between the ages of 4 and 6, just to help them understand the goodness of God's design that will therefore prepare them to understand when boundaries are being crossed. And so I recommend that parents have three basic conversations with little ones. Again, if you have a child that's over this age, you can have the same exact conversation with them. Just use different examples and a different tone of voice than what I'm going to model, you know, because you're not going to want to talk to a 10-year-old like you talk to a 5-year-old. But the first conversation is just about body parts. What it means to be male or female and the special parts of the body that God has designed. And so I recommend, you know, opening up this conversation, just ask your child what their most favorite or special toy is. And then talk about that special toy and then say, how do you treat that toy different than you treat your other toys? And, you know, maybe your child keeps that toy up on a high shelf so that their baby brother or baby sister can't get to it. Or maybe they keep that toy in their room so that when friends come over, friends don't play with it. Or maybe they always keep that toy inside and don't take it with them so that it doesn't get lost or hurt. And then say, you know, just as we have special toys that we treat with special care, God has designed us with special body parts that we are to treat with care. And this is where you are going to want to use the anatomically correct terms for genitalia. So I'm about to say them out loud. So if anybody has kids listening and you want to be the first one to introduce them, you know, not have them hear it from me, you know, just press pause for a second. But this is where you're going to want to say, God designed you as a boy. So the special part of your body that God has given you is your penis, or God designed you as a girl. So the special part of your body God has given you is called your vagina. And then explain the part that the opposite sex has. And the reason that it's so important to use the anatomically correct terms is twofold. One, we want our kids to know that this is a genuinely good part of God's design. So this is not a part that they're to be embarrassed about or ashamed about, and we need to give some special name to. The second reason is this is one of the protections against abuse, that if you give your child's genital some special name and then somebody touches that or seeks to look at that, they might be explaining that to somebody else. And that person has no idea what they're talking about and doesn't understand that abuse is going on. So it's really important to give that part of your body, their child's body, its anatomically correct name. And then explain to your child that this part of their body is so special that nobody should look at it or try to touch it unless you or your spouse are helping care for them, you know, clean up for them after they use the bathroom or whatever, or if a doctor is examining them to make sure that they are healthy. And then just remind them, nobody should look at this part of your body or touch it because it's a special part that God designed. And then you can ask them if they have any questions. And you know, 4, 5, 6 year olds, they ask off the wall things. So sometimes this intimidates yes. parents and they're thinking like, oh my goodness, like what if my child asks me like an extremely awkward or inappropriate question? This is where I say you keep that poker face. You have this lovely smiling poker face. You affirm their question. You just say, I am so grateful that God gave you a mind that is good at thinking. You are so good at that. You know what? I'm going to need a little bit more time to answer your question, but tomorrow night after dinner, we'll talk about it. Then you just bought yourself another 24 hours, you know, to talk with your spouse or to do some research to figure out what you're going to say. So that's the first conversation, because when they understand that that part of their body is special and that God designed it, that it's a good part, but that nobody should look at it or touch it, you're helping set appropriate boundaries, even at a very young age. Second part, you're going to want, second conversation, another day, you're going to want to go through just the basic mechanics of sex. And this is the hardest conversation, but a really important one. So I recommend you start off by saying, have you ever made anybody a promise? And then talk through promises your child has made. If they're 4, they might not have made any promises. And then talk about promises you've made. You know, maybe you promised to take them to the park after you were done with your work, or maybe you promised to bring home a treat. And then say, you know what? Sometimes promises are so serious that people do things with their body to show that they're going to keep them. Like sometimes people might shake hands or they might lock pinkies. You could talk about how when you purchased your home, you had to sign a bunch of papers to show that you were going, you're promising to pay for that house. And then say, did you know that marriage is a promise? That's right. It is. Marriage is when one man and one woman make a promise before God that they're going to love one another and care for one another for their whole lives. And they're going to love one another and care for one another in a way that they don't love or care for anybody else. And then say, just like people sometimes shake hands or lock pinkies or sign papers, when a husband and a wife get married, God designed a special act to seal that promise. And to remind them that they're going to keep that promise. And then you can explain that act is called sex. And this is the hardest part. You just push through with a smile on your face and you explain that sex is when a man places his penis inside of a woman's vagina. And then say, this is the special act that reminds the husband and the wife of the promise they made before God and to one another, to love one another and care for one another their whole lives. And then, you know, a child that age might, they might not think anything about it. They might think it's weird. And then you can say, you know what? If sex sounds a little weird right now, that's okay, because who did God design sex for? That's right. He designed it for a husband and a wife. Are you going to get married anytime soon? No, it's going to be so long before you get married. So you don't need to worry about sex right now. But if you have any questions about it, you can always come and ask me about it. And you know what? Sex is so special. You're not going to talk about it with your friends because their mommies and their daddies are going to talk about it with them. Then that's just explaining that that's what these special parts of the body were designed for. So you're giving your child an understanding of the purpose. And then the third conversation is the basics of reproduction. Recommend you go for a walk in the neighborhood. Just notice all the flowers and the trees and the bushes that you see and then say, do you know how that flower got there? That flower got there when somebody put a seed in the ground and then they watered it and it got sunlight and eventually it grew into this beautiful flower. Then you can explain, God designed our bodies with something similar to seeds. You're a boy, so the kind of seed that God gave you is called sperm, or you're a girl, so the kind of seed God designed you with is called eggs. And then explain that when the man and a woman are having sex, that the husband's penis releases some sperm into the woman's vagina. And if the sperm meets the egg, a baby begins to grow. And babies are always wonderful gifts. And so then explain, we've seen a lot of women who have babies growing inside of them. And that's the special way that God designed for babies to begin to grow. And when you have these basic conversations, you've just laid the basic foundation. And the first time you say these hard things, is the hardest. After that, it gets easier and easier and easier and easier. You know, even me in this interview, the first time in an interview, I had to say, and then you're going to explain to your child, you know, and explain the act of sex. I thought I was going to die, you know, or like I've done it like, you know, dozens of times now, and it's no big deal. And it's similar with your children, that the first time you have these conversations, they're so hard. But then after you have them, it becomes easier the second time. And then the third time, by the time it's like the 10th time, it's just a regular, everyday, ordinary conversation about the goodness of God's design. And when your child understands the goodness of God's design, then they're going to understand when boundaries are being crossed. So that's how you protect your child. I also recommend that you give them that same stop, run, and tell strategy for if anyone ever tries to look at the private parts of their body or to touch them. Say, you need to shout, stop. Immediately, so that they know that you are saying no. You shout stop, and then you run away from that person right away. to me, and then you tell me exactly what happened so that I can protect you. So give them those tools so that they understand what to do. And then you can just set up safe boundaries around your home. Now, we don't want to view everybody, you know, with suspicion that comes into our home, but we just want to have wise boundaries. You know, Brady, before this recording, you and I were talking about our mutual friend, Rosaria Butterfield, and she and her husband open up their home almost every day for hospitality. And they just have some really good boundaries. They don't have young kids in their house anymore, but they have really good boundaries that there are no guests in the bedrooms. You know, that's just a wise rule. So we're not going to want to have guests in our children's bedrooms. You know, everything should be done in the open common space, especially when our children are young. So those are just some safeguards. And then just other healthy things just to notice, you know, are there any sudden changes in our children's behavior? Because that can a lot of times be a sign of sexual abuse. Now, it can be a sign of many other things. You know, it can be a sign of an autoimmune disease. It can be a sign of so many different things. But we just need to know our children well enough to notice when something is off and to be able to ask questions, to be able to get to the bottom of what is going on. So those are just some of my basic recommendations for putting safeguards around our kids.
Yes, that's awesome. No, and our kids are so smart and they're noticing so many things. And so, being able to give them some framework and some categories for the things they're already noticing. Like my four-year-old girls are like obsessed with weddings and marriage. my four-year-old said to the two-year-old, it's like, do you want to have your own kid someday? And he goes, yeah, you know, not really probably knowing much what the question was about. She was like, then we'll find you a really nice mommy to marry. And and it's like, no, they're already observing so many things and absorbing everything around them. And then we live on a farm. And so there's reproduction happening. And so then the conversation becomes a little bit unavoidable at times. Because it's like, what are those donkeys doing out there right now? So I love that on taking away the shame and knowing your kids' hearts. And so many families I've known have dealt with sexual abuse. There was a sudden change in their child. Their child suddenly closed down, was anxious, and it ended up being many times several years until they figure out that it was sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's tragic, and we don't want to live in fear, but we have we need to know our kids well, and we need to be prepared and equipped and not ignorant. We can fall into either one of those traps of just putting our heads in the sand and being ignorant or being consumed with fear. And my wife and I love hospitality too, and that's one of the things I'm passionate about is hospitality. And I've given whole sermons and talks on hospitality, and the fact that it's not just inviting friends to your house, it's welcoming the stranger. Mm-hmm. Right? And but then people give me pushback on that, on it's like, oh, but we can't let anyone in our house because we need to protect our kids. It's like, no, like, you have some reasonable safeguards, and you have conversations, and you teach your kids, and you don't let strangers into the bedrooms, and bedroom doors stay open. Mm-hmm. And there's reasonable things you do. And same at churches. I know so many people who are sexually abused by people in their church, and it's usually not strangers that sexually abuse kids. It's usually someone they know, family members, church members. And so that churches need to have safeguards in place. And it's usually the people that we wouldn't expect. And so we don't want to be consumed with suspicion and fear, but we want to be equipped so then we can have confidence that we can show hospitality and we can be a part of a church and our kids can participate in these different activities because there are safeguards in place. Mm-hmm. And my child and my family have been equipped to head off any threats very early on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I love those recommendations, Brady. So important there.
Elizabeth, let's just close with, I could go through, again, all 40 of these questions, and we've only talked about three, and so people are just going to have to buy the book. I want to close with one just general idea, because you have a whole section on your book on this, on loving loved ones who are outside of God's design and dealing with LGBTQ issues. That's something that I deal with on a daily basis from every side of the equation. I have, you know, parents who are always wrestling through. It's like, oh, an uncle, a nephew, someone came out of the closet. Like, what, how much exposure do I give my kids to them? And how do we handle family holidays? And then I also deal with the other side of it, of parents whose child is struggling with sin. And maybe they came out of the closet as an adult or a teen. And, you know, the parent is heartbroken and they're doing the best they can. And family members are treating them like the plague, and adding on and piling on more shame and guilt to these parents who are trying to navigate this the best that they can. And so that's why I think that those conversations are so important. And so what's a quick overview of how we shepherd our kids when family members are living outside God's design? And some of that isn't just LGBTQ. Yeah. Some of it's, you know, living together outside of marriage. And so-and-so is moving into so-and-so's house, but they're not married. And so how do we shepherd our kids well through that?
Yes. So, you know, it first starts with understanding God's good design. Then it, you know, moves on to understanding how that design has been corrupted by sin. And then how do we love others? And as I was working on the content for this book, God was so faithful and just providing me with all these different situations where I was like, oh, this is something else that really needs to be thought through. So as I was working on that section of the book, I one night I had dinner at Chick-fil-A with a friend and her two boys who were, I think they were 4 and 5 at the time. And so she and I were just, you know, seated in a booth chatting, and her boys were off playing in the play place. And all of a sudden, her four-year-old opens up the door of Chick-fil-A, opens up the door of the play place, shouts his head out into the general Chick-fil-A so everybody can hear, and he goes, "Mom, someone in here does not know Jesus." And then, because we hadn't already heard him shouting, he reiterates that they do not know Jesus. And then he shouts out, "Is that a sin against God?" And so my friend responded so well. She was just like, "Come on over here, bud." You know, and she sat him down on the bench and had a little conversation. But when our kids understand what is true, those truths pop out, you know, out of their mouths, where when we've taught them that God designed us as male or female, and that God's design is good, and that being male or female is not based on our feelings, it's based on God's design for us biologically. And we've explained to them that marriage is just one man and one woman becoming one flesh for life. It's not two men or two women. Or when we've explained that sex, which includes living together, is not okay before you're married. You know, we don't want our kids, you know, to just go around at family gatherings explaining to every relative what they're doing wrong. And so I recommend that parents give kids a three-step formula. I guess I'm realizing that I have a lot of threes in this book. I didn't realize this until our conversation.
Oh, that's perfect.
But it's short enough for kids to understand.
And so short enough for parents to understand.
Yes, that's true. For us as adults to be able to remember. So I recommend that the first thing we train our kids to do is to recognize this isn't God's good design. So, you know, when, you know, their uncle brings home his same-sex partner, we do want them to recognize this is not God's good design, you know, or our unwed niece announces her pregnancy. We do want them to recognize, you know, that sex before marriage is not God's good design, you know, or another family member is transitioning to a different gender. We want them to recognize that. So that's the first thing. Recognize this isn't God's good design. The second step is remind yourself of the truth. And so this is where we want to give our kids just simple catechizing phrases that they can say in their minds when they encounter these things. Like, God designed marriage to be one man and one woman becoming one flesh for life. God's design is good. Or God designed sex for marriage. God's design is good. And teach them these catechizing phrases, and then practice saying them in our minds. Okay, so if we see someone who's not going according to the truth that God has revealed in their body, but instead they're going according to their feelings, what truth are we going to remind ourselves of? That's right. We're going to remind ourselves God designed us as male or female. God's design is good. Okay, now let's say that in our minds. Say it so we can only hear it in our minds. Okay, did you do it? Okay, good. So practice that. And then the third step is to be kind. We are going to treat this person like we would any other person. And we want to explain to our kids, this probably is a more conversation for around the age of 5 or 6, but we want to explain to them that as a child, it's not their job to go around pointing out other people's sin. Now, as adults, depending on the relationship, as adults, sometimes it is our job to lovingly confront others in their pattern of sin, but it's not our kids' job. And so we want them to just remember, recognize, remind and be kind. So recognize this isn't God's good design. Remind yourself of the truth and be kind that we're just going to treat this person like we would any other person. And so we can even prepare our kids ahead of time. You know, what are some questions we can ask Uncle George about his year? Can we ask him questions about his work? Can we ask him questions about his cat? You know, different things that we can train our kids to do to show love to others, because that is our call as Christians, to love others.
Awesome. That is great. I think that is a awesome note to end it on, that we understand God's design, we remind ourselves of the truth, and that we are kind. And so that's how we teach our kids to navigate this. And I appreciate that so much. So let's end with, I've talked about your book a lot, Helping Your Kids Know God's Good Design. What are some other resources on your website?
Yeah. So in Foundation Worldview, we have a number of different resources. You already mentioned our book club that once a month we'll send out titles recommended for children ages 4 to 7 and then ages 8 to 12. And usually they're secular titles. And then we give you 3 to 4 biblical worldview-based questions to talk through with your kids as you read those books. Because the goal is to train our kids to be able to be in the world and to think biblically while they're in the world. So that's one of the resources that we have. We also have a whole host of different curriculums that parents or churches or Christian schools can implement to teach their kids to think critically and biblically, to build up biblical literacy, understanding how to actually study the Bible. And then we have some other resources for families on biblical sexuality. We have a whole curriculum. It's just for families called God's Good Design, which is 30 cool. lessons on God's design for marriage and family. And then we also have, if the talk that I just modeled, those 3 steps of talking about body parts, the basic mechanics and reproduction, you still feel like, oh, I can't do that. We have a series called The Talk Made Easy. It's just 3 short videos. You can watch those videos and then use the same language that we use, or you can watch those videos alongside your child and let us say the uncomfortable things the first time. And then at the end of each video, we direct your child to then turn to you with their questions so that you can continue that conversation. So we have a host of resources. Awesome. There. Really, our goal is just to equip parents and pastors and Christian educators with easy to implement resources.
Awesome. And you guys are giving a 10% discount to all of our listeners. So you can use the discount code CALIBRATE10 and for all the resources on your website and get a discount. So that's awesome. We will link all those things and your website in the show notes so people can find all the links there. And I am so greatly encouraged. I'm so glad that someone mentioned me to you just this fall, and I discovered you and found you. And what an incredible resource that the parents I walk alongside have been just desperate for way too long. So I'm thankful for God that He equipped you for this. I can see how you would be the perfect third grade teacher, but you are also doing an awesome job of teaching us parents too. And we need it. It's valuable. It's needed. The world is a mess, but we can be equipped and walk forward with faith and confidence and raise our kids for such a time as this.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for having me on today, Brady. It's just been a joy to chat with you today.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. Make sure you check out calibrateministries.com for more resources, more podcast episodes. Reach out to me if there's anything I can do for you. And make sure you check out Foundation Worldview for Elizabeth's incredible resources. Thank you.